League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Stevie Weeby here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to the DJ Z-Trip episode. I learned about Z-Trip when I attended Arizona State University in the mid-90s. I used to attend these local hip-hop shows that TMC used to throw, and he was the house DJ for acts such as The Beatnuts, Digable Planets, The Far Side, The Artifacts, Del the Funky Homo Sapien, The Alcoholics, and so on. He was always the house DJ, and he always kicked ass. And that's when I learned and saw what real mixing and blending of records was all about through witnessing DJ Z-Trip spin. So it was an honor to have him, and I was super hyped that he came through, and I hope you enjoy. Shout out to Arizona and Tempe. Peace. Hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Stevie Weeby Show. We have a very special guest tonight. Please welcome for the first time, DJ Z-Trip.
Should I clap for myself?
Yeah,
you can clap for yourself. Hey, man, I like that guy.
Yeah. Man, I'm so hyped you're here, man. You don't even know. You've really influenced me. You got, first of all, I went to Arizona State University in the mid-90s.
That was a perfect time to be there.
Yeah, because you were, I'm going to get to how I discovered you. So there, I'm living in the dorms at Manzanita off University
right,
there.
Right,
right. And I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to discover Mill Avenue.
Right.
Then I went to headquarters. Do you remember headquarters?
Yeah.
So headquarters.
Steve used to work at headquarters. Yeah. You know Steve?
No.
Papa Steve. He was a big dude with a beard.
Oh, no. I don't remember him. I remember Jimmy the Mantis Claw, though.
Yeah. That's supermarket.
Supermarket. Yeah. We're going to talk about them, too, because they really influenced me as well. So, you know, there it's a bong. It's a smoke shop, right?
Yep.
And then so by their cash registers, they'd have flyers. And so because, you know, I was getting in, you know, I was in the, like, Far Side and De La Soul.
Where'd you come from before you?
San Diego.
San Diego.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
what part of San Diego?
Poway. You probably don't remember Poway.
Well, I live in San Diego now.
Oh.
So that's why I was like.
Oh, I'm from Poway. Like, I wrestled at Poway High School.
I taught a DJ class at Poway High School.
Really?
Just like.
Oh my
few months
God!
Ago.
Respect, yeah, respect. Yeah. They have a new wrestling facility there as well, yeah. And so yeah, I'm hyped on that. But I was looking at the flyers, and I don't know. I mean, you were basically it said you know, I don't know, Digable Planets or something,
sure,
and
sure.
Then hosted Z-Trip, and then it was and then the people that threw the event is TMC.
Ty Carter. TMC.
Ty Carter, yeah. So. That's how I first saw your name, and then I never missed a show. I was there for the Far Side. I was there for Artifacts. I was there for Beatnuts. Everything.
You were at a lot of shows then.
A lot of shows and then it was always off. Most of them were off Apache Boulevard. Correct me if I'm wrong. At the Electric Ballroom.
There was Electric Ballroom. There was the Roxy,
yeah.
Which was there. I don't know if you were there before they closed down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We did a whole bunch of shit through like Tempe, Mesa. Some in Scottsdale, some in Phoenix. I mean, yeah. We were all over the place.
Yeah, and then when I, because you DJed throughout all of it, and then because I didn't really know much about it.
Fuck, I opened. You're just making me realize.
I'm walking down memory lane.
Well, the thing is, did I open for everybody?
Everybody.
I opened for Notorious B.I.G. there, and that was at like Club Rio or some shit. But like,
I remember Club Rio.
Yeah. That was a Thai show.
Did you do the Lyricist Lounge stuff as well?
I fucking did everything.
Everything.
All of them. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was me, and then I was putting on people like Fashion, DJ Fashion.
I remember Fashion.
He used to sleep on the couch.
Yeah, he's a white guy, right? Shorter, kind of.
But I helped him get his DJ thing going. I met him at a teen nightclub that I was DJing. It was just a whole nother funny story, but he's, you know, him, all the, yeah, Tricky T, all those guys, man, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And then what about Radar?
Radar was in the crew in Bomb Shelter. It was me, Radar, and Emil.
Yep. And the reason why I know that, because I geeked out on you guys. I'm like, who are these guys? Oh, my God.
Well,
you blew my mind, by the way.
Thanks, man.
It was the first time ever, and I know this is like, we have younger listeners and viewers, but it was the first time where I actually heard and... You were blending two different genres of music that normally wouldn't fit.
Yeah.
And you're doing it in real time with records.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what tripped me out the most. I'm like, oh my God, he was like, it could have been like, I don't know, like B-52s mixed with something else.
Yeah. Well, it was always, so the thing is, for me, I grew up listening to all kinds of music, right? So my whole thing was being influenced by rock records that my brother turned me on to. And then hip hop obviously came along, and I was totally influenced by it. But I was always trying to tie the two things together in a way that would, like, okay, I'll give you guys a whole bunch of what you want and what you know, but let me see if I can throw this Pink Floyd in, or this Led Zeppelin, or this, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But blend it in a way that's still dope. Not like here, I'm just playing a Zeppelin song.
Because like you would do it over acapella, a break.
Acapella over a break, or drums over that, or whatever. I was always trying to, like, just push it a little bit. But then again, to me, that's like, what hip hop was when I got influenced was hearing DJs taking Kraftwerk records or taking, you know, records that weren't necessarily hip hop records and making them hip hop records. And so I was like just trying to extend the what I was influenced by, you know. And it was funny too, because at that time, like the 90s, man, that was like,
this was 94, 90. I'm just letting you know, I was there 94, 95, 96.
Those times, like that's when hip hop was finding its voice in a weird way after it had already found its voice. It was finding a new voice. So, you know, people were starting to sort of take on these different styles were happening. But what I was seeing is what was getting edged out a little bit was sampling, and sampling of really odd places. So it's like, it became all, well, we're only going to sample funk. We're only going to sample James Brown. We're only going to sample, like, you know, Parliament. Yeah. So it became sort of like this was the sound of, and I was like, no, man, like sampling is everything. And so I got a little, like, disenfranchised with, like, the overall. I loved it all, but I was like, it's getting to be very, you know, you weren't having groups like Mantronics or, you know, even DJ Shadow, when he came out, he brought a whole other angle to, like, sampling and, you know, going in different places than just like, oh, here's this funk loop and we're going to rap over it. You know what I mean? Not that was bad. I just wanted more.
Yeah. You know? He's a great artist.
He's amazing. But so anyway, so it's funny, because that's like, you know, that's was sort of like where the Uneasy Listening and that whole mashup thing, you know, which people, a lot of people know me as, came from me being sort of bored. It really became more than DJing for these concerts or clubs or shows. It became mixtapes. Like, people, I would go and get so and so's mixtape, and it would be like all the hot new exclusives, like the new Mos Def and the new whatever, and then I'd go hear the next person's mixtape, and it was like the new Mos Def and the new, and it became the same, like everyone's playing the same
thing,
tunes, and, and it, so sonically it was still dope and I still loved it, but I was like, where's the oddball, where's the curiosity, and so,
but
I
you
was
did
like,
it you did something different.
Well, I was like, well, let me just slug in different, you know, source material, and like take these things that. And so I was always a fan of trying to make it be something that you wouldn't normally hear, and but still keeping it in the vein of, like, you could still bump it between the Mos Defs and the, you know, Tribes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, this is, I was curious about this, because when I used to see you perform, were you freestyle? Like, did you have a certain set, or were you just making up it up?
A little bit
as
of both. I mean, you know, you know, because we were doing bringing records to those shows, so you're talking like, you know,
like
four,
actual vinyl instead
four
of
crates
your
of records, yeah, like bringing them, lugging them everywhere. Yeah. So for me, it was, you know, you'd have a couple routines that you had planned out, but then you'd also have, you know, I would take acapellas and instrumentals from different things, and it was like, as long as I knew what tempo things were in, I could sort of bounce around. So I always laid my my record crates out by tempo. Like I'd
so
organize
that's BPM,
it.
Right?
Beats per minute. Yeah,
beats per minute. And then so you would match that up in there.
Yeah, so it's like, so again, say I'm mixing a war tour, it's 100 beats per minute, and I'm mixing that, and I know that, okay, I've got the instrumental, but I've got this a cappella thing that's at 100 beats per minute.
I'll launch
into the, you know, always having doubles of every record, so you could go from the vocal to the instrumental, put an a cappella on, mix that a cappella, take the instrumental off while the a cappella is going, grab another instrumental of another thing, put in on.
Yeah.
So you're constantly like,
yeah,
you know, just keeping it moving. Yeah. But it was work. It was
dude.
It was DJing.
If y'all haven't seen him perform, I mean, because you blew, like, I was like equally as hyped to see you. I'm like, oh, Z-Trip's on the flyer. I was equally as hyped, like, and like just my whole crew. Like, I basically got into the art form, you know, because I slowly got samplers
right
through that time period. Because I want to talk about Supermarket as well, because they were another local Tempe hip hop group.
Yes.
That would open, they would be on the flyer with you.
Right.
It'd be introduced like Supermarket and then the main headliner.
Right.
So how did you meet those guys and like?
Well, so we all used to hang out like in the same crews and like, you know, we all connected, whether it be like, you know, even just at the end of the hip hop show, the last 20 motherfuckers that are out in the parking lot rapping and spitting.
Yeah,
you know, those
are the
guys who are everywhere. They just live it, love it. And so you just see them at every hip hop event, right?
Yeah. So shout out to Ruckus, Fluid, and Cursive.
Yeah, man.
Brandon B.
Yeah. And Jimmy, man.
Yeah.
And,
oh, Jimmy the Mantis Claw. Yeah.
And like, and all the other people that, you know, there was a million other cats that rolled in that clique, and they were sort of like the next wave of MCs and stuff coming up in Arizona. So we were always trying to look after them, like Puma and
I remember
Boo
Puma
and those guys. Yeah. Like,
yeah. There was another guy. Correct. Oh God, he was a white guy. He was always on Six and Mill. He always had like a leather jacket and leather gloves.
Oh fuck, I don't know. That could have been.
I forgot his name. But he was also a guy because he didn't look like a rapper. This is like pre Eminem. This is pre everybody.
Yeah. Well, there was a whole bunch. There was a little squad of people that we all used to roll with, and some people would come and go, but like we had a scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that was the cool
yeah
thing about AZ is, you know, we were often overlooked because you know sometimes Arizona would be like the stop that nobody would make. Like,
mm-hmm,
oh, we're going from here, we're going to go to San Diego, then LA. Mm-hmm. It's like they'd skip over AZ. But the cool thing about AZ was we had a scene, and because we didn't have so much outside influence, we were sort of left to our own devices, and we made shit dope. So, but you know, by the time people would show up to play and we were opening, you know, because we didn't have, you know, we were influenced and had our own circle and our own scene, and we really were about skills and pushing it, we would sometimes blow the openers out of the box just because we were on some like, this is how we get down. And let's show everybody.
Oh, there's a Tempe Bronx crew.
Yeah,
too.
Tempe Bronx crew was yeah, that's some AZ shit.
Yeah.
But,
Zero?
Zero, yeah. I still
shout
speak
out
him
to Zero.
Yeah, yeah.
All
those guys.
These names
Storm
are coming up now.
Guys.
Yeah,
Storm,
yeah. Storm,
Zero.
And then there was the B-Boy. There's a lot of good B-Boy crews, too.
Yeah. Furious Styles.
Sour Patch.
Yeah.
Furious Styles. House. Shout out to House.
Yeah.
I remember him.
There was a million cats out there. And they were all doing great shit. Flying Steps was... not Flying Steps. Foot Clan was another AZ. Anyway, but I brought this, and I thought you would fucking love it. This is for you.
You know what? This is so crazy you popped this out because I was going to talk about Dumb Koch,
mm-hmm,
my next wave series of questions.
Right. So that
I have the CD of this, but right, can I, is this
that's
for me?
Your, that's
okay,
for you,
thank
yeah
you.
Yeah.
This is highly, so shout out to Supermarket again. This is a highly influential album for me because when I heard it, like me and my homies were kind of blown away because this is before I even had any gear. I didn't know how they're coming up with these sounds. It reminded me of like Beastie Boys mixed with Souls of Mischief mixed with Boogie Monsters.
Yeah.
Because you know,
Monsters, awesome.
Those guys' rapping styles were all over the map. Like Fluid was kind of the more raw guy.
Right.
Ruckus was more higher pitch, kind of ad rocky, Romai, Far Side vibe. Brandon B, he was Cursive back then.
Right.
Was more like direct like old school flow.
Yeah.
But this album, did you, I could have sworn you had a cut on here.
So I produced like, I think, I did two songs, but one song song was three beats as a song. So it was kind of like, you know, three tracks. So
you were on Time Rhymer.
Yeah.
So this Time Rhymer track really stood out to me because
so dope.
Yeah, it was really, real. No, it was extremely dope because it was like a movie.
Yeah.
You had the prehistoric, then you had the future, you had the middle ground.
Yeah.
But each MC had a different segment.
Right, right.
Did you produce it?
Yeah. So I produced that one, and then
that was a genius
one
track.
One other track on there.
That was a genius track.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, like, these dudes, man, like, I don't know where they're at. Oh, no, Brandon B and I were talking.
He's still doing
things. He was going to hop on here. I think he's in the Bay.
We just show it to the camera.
Yeah, the crew's called Supermarket, and the album, they had another album. Their first album was called Hologramic Action Figures.
That's the one I don't have.
Yeah, but you remember? That? No.
See, I've got it somewhere, but I gotta find it.
I know I've got it somewhere,
but either way.
Yeah, dude, I listen to this the same way I listen to The Far Side and on, like, awesome. You know, Beastie Boys. They used to slang this. They had CDs as well. I have the CDs somewhere around here. But they used to sling this off of 6th & Mill.
Yeah, yeah.
And 6th & Mill was a place where all the hip-hoppers would go. They would cypher and b-boy
there.
They'd
sell them at Swell Records. Remember Swell Records?
Oh, yeah, I remember in Scottsdale.
Yeah, that was kind of like, that was where I sold all my mixtapes.
Yeah, I remember. Oh, my God, yeah. Now. That's where, yeah, we'd go there, too, to get all the albums.
Yeah.
So let's get back. Now, God, I'm like jumping because I'm so hyped you're here. Are you from Arizona originally?
Originally from New York. So my whole thing with Arizona is I moved there when I was 7. My family was on its way to California. My dad's brother, my uncle, lived in California, and we were all moving there for work. My dad's an electrician, and I think there was work out there. So we were on our way to California, and somehow we just stopped in Arizona. I think my mom fell in love with it, and we ended up moving there. But we moved to a place called New River, and New River was about 25-30 miles outside of the city limits of Phoenix. So and we lived on a dirt road that was like a mile dirt road to pavement. Jeez. And the pavement was where the bus would pick me up to go on that 45-minute bus ride to school. It was hardcore. It was like hardcore. And I went.
So you went to school there?
Yeah. But the thing is, it's crazy, is that happened, and then my parents got a divorce in my teens, and my dad moved back to New York. And so then I was back and forth between Arizona and New York. And that's really where I found hip hop, was around that time, you know, 84, 85, 86, going to New York and buying these hip hop records, these regional records that nobody knew anything about in Arizona. And I'd bring them back to Arizona and play them for these Arizona kids. And they would be like, what the fuck is this? That's kind of how it started and then the other thing of mixing rock and shit. It's like most people in Arizona at the time loved rock or popular music and didn't know hip hop. So I was always trying to fuse. I was always trying to get, like, my whole thing was in school, you'd have like the kids who would be into like, you know, break dancing or whatever. And like, but they wouldn't hang out with the rock kids, and the rock kids wouldn't hang out with the, you know, the b-boy kids. And so these two worlds. And I liked both of them. I loved, you know, I could talk about Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and rock music, but I could also talk about like Curtis Blow and Nucleus and the Fat Boys or whatever with both worlds. And I saw the common thread, but some people didn't. But there were a few people who did. And, you know, I was always trying to, like, you know, I remember when the Beastie Boys happened, I remember like showing that to all. Well, that was when that happened. It was such
Paul's Boutique, baby.
Yeah, but even License to Ill, when that first album hit, people, before it blew up, that sort of little bit of time, I remember playing it to people and them going like, what is this? It's like, you don't know?
They're innovative.
She's on it? Do you know She's on it? Yeah. Do you know Slow and Low? You got to hear Slow and Low. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
and
that was a great song.
And obviously, once it happened, it caught on. But I remember like playing that for some people in Arizona for the first time and then being like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, you know? Did you end up, you did stuff with the Beasties, didn't you?
I did some sort of collaboration stuff. I did some mixed work with them.
Let's go back to your trajectory as like becoming this great artist. Like, how did you get into DJing?
Well, my thing is I was buying records, right? So I was buying like extended 12-inch versions of things. I would hear Marley Marl and Red Alert on the radio in New York mixing these records, and I knew some of these records, but all of a sudden I'd hear a fourth verse of something. I'd be like, what is this fourth? I've never heard this.
Oh, it's like a B-sides thing?
It's an extended version. So they're playing like, you know, the radio version was 3 minutes. They're playing the 7-minute version of something where it's like a whole nother verse or a whole scratch solo. I'm like, I know the song, but I don't know that. Where is that?
So I would
go to the record store and buy the 12-inch versions of these things. And that ended up being like a crate turned into two crates, turned into three crates, turned into like this was my record collection, and people would be like, hey, man, why don't you bring your records over to our party and play them? And so I'd be like, all right, cool. And so I started playing records for people. But
well,
like,
just this is in high school, junior high. When was this?
This was like early high school. Like, yeah, sort of late junior high into early high school. Making tapes for people, like trying to spread this music around. And then that turned into me like buying two turntables and a mixer. And one was a belt drive. One was a direct drive. It was total like I was learning, but I was hearing all this stuff, being influenced by it. But I didn't have anybody that was teaching me. I was kind of. So that's why I didn't know. Like, I used to, this is funny. I told this to Jazzy Jeff. I used to look at his album covers with a magnifying glass to see how he would weigh his tone arm for his needle, because I was always finding that my needle would skip. And I was like, how's he doing it? Maybe there's something I'm not knowing. So I'd like, I'd always try to just absorb as much information as I could. I mean, this is like, again, pre-internet, pre-YouTube. Like, how do you weigh a thing? You know, it's like...
It's like weight, your weight distribution.
Yeah, like, what just, and what needle you're using and like what, you know, what gear is... So I was... So it's funny because I ended up learning how to DJ backwards. It's called hamster style, if you're familiar with this.
Explain to the viewers.
All right, so hamster style. You have your right turntable, your left turntable, and your mixer in the middle. Normally, the way they... If you're scratching a record in, you would bring your fader in left to right. You'd be like, ba, ba, because you're bringing in this new sound. And when the fader is all the way over, this record is playing. And then when you bring the fader over to this side's playing. For me, I did that. That's how the normal way to do it is. But I always equated it to, if I'm putting the record out, my hand's going, ah, my other hand should be going, ah, at the same time. That should be both going away from me instead of this. Which is one's coming to you, one's going away.
Yeah.
So I hooked it up where it was going out, and that's how I learned, was to do it that way. So I kind of learned backwards, kind of like Jimi Hendrix playing the guitar upside down. Jeez. I learned how to DJ backwards, and it wasn't until I actually saw other DJs in an environment where it's like, remember, I went to go DJ at some house party, and there was another guy. He's like, why do you have your stuff set up backwards? I'm like, you got your stuff set up backwards. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, right. Until you're yourself.
Yeah, it was all self-taught. Oh, so I heard, and I was emulating what I heard, but I didn't have anybody to be like, no, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
So I sort of taught myself. And to this day, I'm still backwards. I'm still, it's just how I do it.
How did you learn how to scratch and blend and do all like, all that other technical stuff.
Just all, again, trying to emulate the things I was hearing, but also in emulation, I was learning what things were happening, and I would trial and error. So it was a lot of woodshedding, man. Like, as a kid, like, you know, a lot of people would go out to, like, especially in high school, towards high school, I started taking it real serious, because it's like, this is, I got to master this. So other kids would go out to, like, that fucking high school football games or whatever, and I would be at home, like,
how many
figuring
hours
it out.
Put...
Oh, dude, a lot, as much as I could. Because I would come home from school and go right to it. Like, I was so... And by the way, it all even started prior to that with, like, pause mixtapes. I remember my mom got a...
Explain what the... Because there's a lot of younger...
All right, so again, cassette. Yeah. This is a cassette,
this is a
right?
Tape.
And so this is how you would hear music. I would record this off the radio in New York or whatever, and I would bring these back home to Arizona and listen to them. And so once my mom came home one day with a double cassette player, and normally it was just one cassette, you'd put it in and you play it like a Walkman or whatever, but this was the ability to put in a blank cassette in the other player and play this cassette, and you could record onto it. So if there's a part of the cassette you liked, you could play it and record it to this side, pause it, rewind the part, play it over again. So it was the equivalent of extending a break. You go to the next song. So I could extend.
Oh, that's looping. That's what samplers do.
That's
now.
What samplers do. But that's what DJs were doing with records.
Oh, you had to do it manually like
that? Well, that's how you would, if you would take a drum break from, you know, say Apache by Incredible Bongo Band. There's a drum break, and if you wanted to continue that loop for people to rap over, or Walk This Way, Run DMC, was an Aerosmith drum break at the beginning of the song. You play that, and you just keep it in time, and then people could rap to it. That's how you gave them a drum break, right? So I was taking these one bar loops or four bar loops from a rock record and playing it, and then trying to like time it as I was rewinding and hitting like release on the record button to keep it in time. And it was really rudimentary, but you could get
time consuming, man.
And well, but that, you know, if you had nothing, if you had nothing else to tinker with,
because now all I have to do is put it on a button.
This is
a dinosaur. So the step above that is this.
Sure.
And I had to figure this on my own as well.
Yeah.
but you literally just time it out and just loop it on a button.
Right.
And it automatically loops. Yeah.
Well, but prior to prior to having the machines or the ability to do that. I mean, there were machines that you could do that with, the SB1200 and a couple others, but I didn't have access to any of that as a kid.
It wasn't like $2,000, like a $4,000 machine.
My first sampler was an EPS 16 Plus, and that was by Insonic.
Insonic. It was the keyboard one?
Yeah, that was my first. Yeah. And so once I got that, I was able to like start producing. And then I started producing. So that's kind of like a few years later, that's when I produced that stuff.
Yeah, it's so crazy because check this out. Hold up. So when I was, once I wanted to wanted to mess around with beats too.
Sure, sure.
I bought this off a guy at the dorms.
What is this? For,
it's this is my first sampler.
Holy shit.
And you
shit.
Can put batteries in it.
What the fuck is this? A Roland what?
I bought it off a DJ Yellow Jacket. I don't know if you've heard of it. He was he was a Japanese guy.
Look at this. You need for the memory, like this memory card, old school. How much sampling time do you have on this?
Not much.
Who even knows?
Not much. Yeah, I mean, you could loop a breakbeat and then put a couple jazz samples.
Yeah, yeah,
or
little hits.
But so before I got this, I would run into DJ Jimmy the Mantis Claw.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because after this dropped, my mind was blown, and I was like, "Oh, it inspired me." And then I kept, "How you guys doing this? Like, what are you using? You know?" And then he was like, "Hey, just I don't know. A lot of that stuff is like Jedi secrets.
Yeah.
So he wasn't really that upfront about it.
Well, but
I had to figure it out on my own, and I'm glad I did.
The thing is, also, all of us were figuring it out on our own, and that's the thing. I think about Arizona is because we were all these misfits and weirdos that sort of came together. I mean, that's kind of what Bomb Shelter was. That was me, Radar, and Emil. But it was me. But it was me and Emil prior to that because I met him when I was working at the Warehouse Records and Tapes in the mall.
Explain to the viewers what Warehouse Records
Records and Tapes was kind of like Tower Records, or I guess they had Music Plus out in L.A.
Yeah.
And, any record store chain, right?
Yeah.
Your Best Buy or whatever. But it was like a record store.
Yeah,
record store in the mall. And Emil worked across the way at a pet store. And we would get there in the mall early and be setting up when no one's in the mall. And I remember, when you get there early, you're the first guy in, you get to put on whatever you want and you just crank it up while people are getting into, we open in an hour and you're prepping all your shit or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I was blasting Kraftwerk loud as fuck, just bang, in the store, busting the speakers out. And I hear this tink, 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 tink on the glass. And I look over, it's the guy from the pet store. And I open up the thing. I'm like, what? He's like, what do you know about Kraftwerk? I was like, what do you know about Kraftwerk? And that was our friendship started there.
Oh, wow.
Off of that. So, but the thing is, he was really into house music and techno and electro music. And I was into hip hop. And so our common ground was Kraftwerk.
You guys start getting on a lot of flyers as well as the three of you.
Well, the thing is, it was he and I fucking around for a little bit. But then I was dating Radar's sister. And she one day was like, "You're gonna love my brother. He's totally into the scratching stuff."
Well, explain to the viewers who Radar was.
So Radar is this third. There was three of us.
Yeah.
But I met Radar one day when I went to his sister's house, and she's like, "Yeah, you should meet my brother." And I walked in, and this kid had a little room, turntable set up, a whole bunch of flyers and stuff, and he was scratching over DJ Magic Mike records. And it's like, that's Miami bass stuff, so he's scratching. But he was killing it. I was like, what? And I don't know, he was 14, 15 years old, whatever it was.
Oh my God.
Young. Yeah. I was like, you're out of control. We got to hang out. I almost kind of stopped wanting to hang out with her.
Yeah.
I mean, I still wanted it, but I was like, this is where the shit is. It's like this guy.
You must have made an impression if you're ditching the girl.
Well, I was like, yo, we gotta hang out. I gotta take you under my wing. Holy shit. This is complete skill. And he was emulating all the things he saw and heard. But anyway, he got in the crew, and then, we brought Qbert to town, and basically when Qbert showed up, he blew Radar's mind. He blew all of our minds, but Radar especially sort of cracked his head open, and then all of a sudden Radar just grew out of control. So we had our crew was us three. We'd set up six turntables. I'd be in the middle. I'm the guy who is scratcher a little bit, but also a little bit sort of futuristic or abstract with beats.
Yeah.
Emil, who's totally over here, abstract electro, and then Radar, who's total scratcher and also into beats and stuff. But our pendulum went like this.
Was it like a symphony? Like you guys created?
Well, we would figure out who would, me and Emil would basically bop back and forth between who would have the, you know, be controlling the main tune. And yeah, if he had a groove, he'd be like, yo, I got something. I'd be like, cool. Mm-hmm. And then I'd be like, oh, I got something for that. And he'd pass it back to me. And Radar was always cutting over top of it. And then I would cut over top of it with Radar. And so it was just a lot of, you know, 6 turntables, but like knowing when and where to play. Sometimes sitting out. Sometimes you sit out for 2 songs. But we would do, we would play around a couple different spots, but we ended up having a place at Nita's Hideaway, which was a bar.
I remember Nita's Hideaway.
In Tempe. That was like, and so we did like a Wednesday.
It was a smaller bar.
Super small. We'd go and we'd set up every Wednesday, and we'd get people come through, and that was sort of our launch pad. And we had MCs and drums.
So you had a monthly or something?
Well, it was like a weekly.
Oh, weekly.
Weekly. But it was at a fucking hole in the wall, bar.
It's cool.
Like $5 to get in. In Tempe, like all the college kids, you know, we'd maybe make $500, $800 if it was killing it, you know?
Yeah.
But I had Shadow play there at one point. He came through. Cut Chemist and Newmark played at one point with us. And so it was, you know, anyone who was coming to town, like we had our weekly thing, but then I also had my thing opening for all these hip hop events. And like, it was just, you know, there was only a few of us doing it, but we really had a unit and a sound and a thing. And again, that was cracking. And up until around, like around 94, 96, whenever
I started
getting booked to out of town to do other things. I started doing B-boy events a little harder, and
the B-boy summits.
B-boy summits, but then like Battle of the Year and some of the.
My
first time I ever went to Europe was for. The first time I went was with Mr. Freeze from Rocksteady Crew.
Yeah,
and then I went out again with and did Battle of the Year, and so now all of a sudden I'm starting to tour around. You know, being based out of Arizona, which was great. And then David Paul from Bomb Records. I don't know if you're familiar with them, who did the Return of the DJ series.
Oh, yeah. I remember what the covers looked
like. He was based out of San Francisco. Yeah. He had caught wind of me. He was like, hey, do you want to do some DJ tracks? We're making a full DJ record of just DJ music. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Did that. And
well, let's backtrack. I just,
that opened up my own curiosity.
How did you, what's the difference between doing like, regular like opening up for Souls of Mischief opposed to doing a B-boy event, like do you have to cater differently
different music? I mean, people you know, B-boy events, breakdance, you know, they want to dance to funky breaks. It's like, so there's a little bit more of like you're specifically playing a style of music to have them dance, whereas playing or opening for a show, if it's like Souls of Mischief or Dell or whoever, it's like you're playing these events where you're playing hot hip hop tunes for, you know, heads, and could be like, you know, Organized Confusion song or whatever. It's like something you wouldn't necessarily dance to. You might receive and digest more. You might do some wordplay or scratching or whatever, you know. So it's, you know, I was doing those things in addition to also DJing to pay the bills at these nightclubs around Arizona, where it was like it was the equivalent of the Top 40 club. Like that was the thing. So I would go, and I had that as my gig, like my steady bread and butter, playing like mostly music I didn't really love, but it afforded me the ability to buy records I did love. And then, you know, I would go and I'd DJ that from like whatever 9 to 1 or 2 in the morning, then go to the car, take off the fucking, you know, tie or whatever the hell I had to do, and then put on this. And then go to the after hours hip hop club and play there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you mentioned Dell, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something I was looking up on YouTube. There, I don't know if it's you. Just I'm glad you're here. It was on Yom TV Raps. It's like Casual and Dell, and then but there's a DJ. Well, did you DJ for them at any time in your life?
Yeah, well, I did, but not for Yom TV Raps. Unless it was a clip that somebody
took. It was a
took.
Clip.
Okay.
I think it was you. Though. It was you. I think it was you.
Well, then I got to see that clip because here's the thing. I DJ'd for Casual and Dell in Europe when we went out there. So it was
From that then.
Right? Okay,
yeah, it was
okay.
From that. Yeah,
but it was on
Yom. It was on Yom TV Raps. No, it would no. This is what it was. It was a cutaway. So it was them getting interviewed, but then they would cut away to them performing in between the interview.
Do you know where this clip is?
I'll send it to you after.
Holy shit.
It's definitely. Oh, you didn't know about
no,
it?
No, no. Well,
Here's the
thing. So we got booked. This is whatever years later. I got booked to go DJ in Europe on a tour, and it was me, Casual, Dell, 7L and Esoteric, and Mr. Liff, and a couple other people on that tour, like all the Brick Records guys from Boston. So we went out there, Virtuoso, another MC. So we were out there, and we did, I want to say, a few weeks, but in like show 2 or 3, Casual and Dell's DATs broke,
And what's a DAT? Explain to
me. A DAT is digital audio tape. So it's basically which is an analog tape.
This is great.
But it was a tape where it read it digitally. So it was, at the time, it was the equivalent of a CD. Like, CDs weren't out yet, but it was the tape version of a CD. So the best quality you could get, whatever. So MCs were performing off of DAT tape. So they'd play
their instrumentals on this.
Right, right. So back in the day, we used to, you know, use records.
Yeah.
These guys would show up and be like, here, play my DAT. Just play it. The show goes, you know, all the way through, and they would just rap to it.
They broke theirs?
Which is, well, it broke like 2 days in, and so they were like, hey, will you DJ for us? And I was like, well, sure, but
you
like,
have their instrumentals?
No, but that's the thing. I was like, I only have my set that I came out to do, so like, I don't mind, but like, where's if you want me to do your shit, I'm going to need your song. So I got on the phone with Domino from Hyro and was like,
they're their manager now.
Well, but he was their producer
at the
time.
Okay, I forgot he
produced. I was like, look, send me instrumentals. He's like, no problem. We have Show Wax. So basically they sent me the instrumentals, all the instrumentals for, you know, Souls of Mischief, Casual, Endel, all the Hieroglyphics instrumentals at the time, which nobody had.
Well, you had it.
Well, all of a sudden, I had these fucking instrumentals because I had to DJ for them. And it was great because after the tour, I was like, yo, I got like...
Oh, you got to keep them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
So I had these and I'd bust them out at shows and be like, yo, what is that?
That's because you could use them when you're...
When I'm playing.
When you're playing live.
Which was dope because now, you know, no one had ever heard any of the instrumentals from, you know...
Dude, their beats are so dope.
The best. They're the fucking best.
The best.
Yeah.
No Need for Alarm.
Yeah.
Fear Itself.
Exactly.
93 Till Infinity and on.
Yeah, Domino, Dante Ross, all these guys who were producing their shit. Like, I had these tracks.
Wow.
And that was like, you'd flash on people. You'd be like, yo, check this out. And you'd show
them.
Other
DJs?
Yeah, they'd be, what? You have the instrumentals? It's like, it's right.
Yeah.
But here's the downside was, it fucked me up because I went out there to DJ just for myself for this tour. But I ended up like playing and then playing for two other artists. So I was basically on stage for like the whole fucking night.
Yeah,
like it was a lot of work for those records.
How did you, man, that's so cool. Do you still have those?
Fuck yeah. Yeah.
Records now?
Of course.
The original instrumentals from old Hieroglyphics.
Of course. From Casual Del and No Need for Alarm, Fear Itself, and the 93 Till Infinity, the first, or not the whatever the first, that was the first record.
Yeah.
So.
Did they, because that's how I discovered, I already knew about Souls and Del, but when they start coming to Tempe, that blew me away.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh my God, they're coming?
Yeah.
Like, how did you get involved with TMC and then getting all these great acts?
Well, he Ty just knew me from being around the way, and like, I was the hip-hop guy to go to, you know what I mean? I was kind of like the hip-hop guy there, so... It was just like, yo, you want to open, you know, you want to play? I was like, sure. You know, and he took care of me. He always had me on his shows, but, you know. But it was funny, man. Ty and I love Ty, and I've seen him recently, and he's doing good, and it's great to see him. But there was times, man, you know, we were all young trying to fucking hustle. But, like, remember there's some times where I'd be like, yo, Ty, you owe me that, you know, that money from the show. And it's like, you know, there were those moments where it's like.
Yeah, well, it's business.
But it was also like he was the guy bringing everyone to town and I was the guy to do it. So I had to I had to lean off a couple shows because it's like, until you pay me my money. Like we got into like some, you know, young entrepreneurial, young hip hop shit. But but he always, you know, to his credit, he always came through and he's a man of his word. And
shout out to Ty.
Yeah, Ty Carter. Yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong, because when me and when we tried to do like little shows here and there, did his mom promote too?
Well, his mom would come
like
out.
She was like a kind of a heavier.
Yeah, she would come out to some of the clubs that you know.
Because that's we got shows through that.
That's awesome. So Ty's mom. She
usually
have tickets.
We didn't get to Ty, but like me and my crew had to go
this
through
is
Ty's
so,
mom.
This is so fucking Arizona regional. If you're still here, it's because you're probably from Arizona.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but this is my platform.
This is what I wanted.
This is all what good. I wanted.
So
all
shout
good.
Out to Ty's mom.
Yeah. Thanks shout out to the 17 people who are still.
Oh no, is that the Mason Jar?
Probably Mason Jar. I saw X Clan at the Mason Jar.
Yeah, we did shows at. That's where
fucking
we
crazy.
Couldn't get to Ty, but crazy. Ty's mom. She used to do this to us in our crew. Okay, there would be like 20 acts on. We'd have like a 5-minute set. She goes, oh, it's your turn. Go,
you're
go, go. It's,
me right
it's
now.
Your turn. Go, go, go. Do your rap.
Oh, my God.
And then
do your
we
rap.
Would have.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it was so unorganized. And so, but we never got paid.
Shout out to Ty and shout out to Ty's mom.
We'd be smoking in the parking lot, saying, in the parking lot, we don't know what went wrong. The beat skipped. And
okay,
they,
you got to understand the mason jar.
Yeah. Explain to them mason what the jar mason jar is.
Was a bar that fit like seven people. Hence mason jar, tight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was small.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, come on, man. We were all learning and figuring it out as we were going.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you didn't think I was gonna bring that up?
No, fuck. Last thing I yeah. thought about was mace jar. I saw X Clan.
Well, you didn't think I was gonna bring up Ty's mom?
No, no. Like it's awesome though. It's yeah. awesome.
Yeah.
You were definitely there.
Yeah.
This is references you can't.
This
is not Nardwar.
No.
You were there.
I was there.
Shout out to Nardwar.
I
love that dude.
I'm highly influenced by a lot of Tempe stuff that was going on. I mean, if it wasn't for me going to those shows, I don't know if I would have gotten all this gear to try to do beats as well. You know, it was because of you, Supermarket. There was a couple other groups. There was a group where there's a white guy and two black guys. They were on. They did a show with Funk Dubiest. You may have been there. God, yeah. I forgot the name of them, though. It was a white guy and two black guys. Was there a guy named Cappuccino?
Oh, yeah, Cappuccino. Oh, no question.
Oh, no question.
No question.
I'm thinking about a different group.
Those are three black dudes.
Yeah, okay, so no
I'm trying to think of who the white guy. I mean, look, there was all sorts of, like, Big Five Click. There was, like...
Fitzpacket. Yeah, there was a... Cypher Kings.
Yeah, there was cats who were trying to get it off and, you know, make it happen. And same thing with DJs. There was a million... You know, we were... There's a lot of people who are inspired by it, and they were all trying to find their voice, and it was a very interesting time. I actually loved the shit out of it because it was raw. We were all just young and raw and into like trying to figure it out in Arizona. You know what I mean?
Dude, those shows were so. I mean, I'm in LA. I've been out here for 20 years now.
Right.
But those memories, I have so many memories of the best shows ever in that time period when you were DJing. In mid 90s to like late 90s,
yeah.
I just those stand out to me.
Yeah,
as you know, at $5, $10 a ticket. Hell,
well,
yeah.
It was like I said, it was a special time, and like I don't think any of us really knew or understood where it was headed. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we kind of did, like, but you know, it was also, you know, that's just what that was it. That was the weekend. You would go do this. That was it every day. Go dig for records. Go play them. Make a mixtape. Go to Kinko's, fucking make a hand cut the cover.
This is a raw.
You know,
album.
Call the people. Hey man, did you? You know, I dropped off 5 mixtapes. Did you sell them? Oh yeah, cool. I'll come down and get the money, or show up and like, oh man, we don't have your money. What? It was always just hustle, 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 grind. Get your name out. You know.
Yeah.
Check out our shirts. Check out our fucking thing. We're, you know, B-boy shit.
How did you make the transition? Because you're global now, obviously.
Yeah.
You're global.
Yeah.
You're all over the world. How did you make the transition from being from Arizona to doing B-boy events to like the other tiers above that?
Well, I started producing a little bit more and started getting on compilations. I think that definitely helped. You know, going and running around and doing all these different shows all over the world at the time. But like every time I would go to a place, you know, if I played in Hawaii, or if I played in Japan, I would always dump off CDs or mixtapes. And it started to get me other gigs in other places. And I remember Future Primitive was a mixed CD that came out. That was me and Radar in San Francisco. There was a guy who was throwing parties up there where he was pairing up DJs to play with each other.
Yeah.
Cut Chemist and Shortcut did one.
He's been on here. Cut's been on here.
Yeah. Cut's a homie.
Yeah.
So that, like, I just started like getting in as many places as I could fit in, and that ended up lending itself to just being a bit more visible. And the Scratch documentary came out, and that kind of like...
Dude, that was a dope documentary.
It cracked open the door. And it was funny because Mark, the guy who from Future Primitive, was like, you got to meet these guys. They're doing this documentary on DJs. I was like, oh, word? So I sat down with them and I was like, so tell me about your documentary, guys. Like, you know, B-boy, like,
dude, that was
tell me what kind of
it blew up.
DJ shit you got. And they were like, oh, well, we got this, and this. I was like, okay, oh, cool. All right. Sounds like you are on it. I'm like, but do you have Jazzy Jeff? Do you have, you know, I started running down the list of
Shadow
like...
Shadow was on there.
Yeah,
as
but
well.
I started running down the list of like, who do you have? Who don't you have? And I was like, oh, you got to interview him. You got to interview him. And I, all of a sudden, it sort of opened up the door a little bit. And I think they started hitting a little more people. And eventually, you know, they hit me and they hit a whole bunch of people in the Bay Area. But then it came out and I got to see like, you know, just haphazardly being in the right place, kind of at the right time with all the movement that had already happened prior to me when they captured me and I had stuff that I had to say, that cracked open the door. But the big thing I think was, you know, A, being on screen with like me and, you know, DST, who did the scratching on Rocket, now DXT, or Premier, or, you know, some of these, you know, the legendary guys that were like, I'm on the same documentary as them. So it sort of lumped me into like this, encapsulated some of us into like being sort of immortalized in the scene of like, holy shit.
That's
like,
a trip.
Right. Wow.
Yeah,
crazy.
You're all in that.
But the crazy thing was once it came out after we did theaters and tours and everything, and shout out to all the people who are in it, that, you know, there's
too
a million,
many to list.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. But when they came to do the DVD version, they were like, we have this bonus footage that we could do on another disc and we want you to be a part of it. I was like, cool, come by the house, we'll figure it out. They show up at the house. I really wasn't expecting it, and I was sort of like making beats. I think I was probably high or something, and I was just sort of like whatever. And they showed up, and it was like
film crew,
and they're like, show us how you mix and what you do. And I was like, okay, well, this is how I sort of, you know, I showed them about how I mark records with tape at the time.
That's
like,
right.
You put the needle down and it would go right to the cue point you want. I showed them about sort of pitch and mixing, and so I did a little tutorial, and I didn't really think much of it, but that ended up coming out on the bonus DVD, mm-hmm. and it ended up being a huge segment. And it also, because I think it started making noise, at some point MTV aired that whole segment, 15 minutes of me, which I wish I would have known, because I was like, you know,
oh,
just high showing the camera crew what
the... Yeah, and you're at your spot,
right,
just doing your thing.
But they ended up broadcasting that everywhere, and that opened up a lot of doors. But at the same time, I'd put out this mix called Uneasy Listening with DJP, mm-hmm. and that was in the, like, 2000. And that had made a lot of noise. It got some recognition in Rolling Stone and Spin and all these magazines. But it's kind of at the same time Napster was happening. So this CD started getting passed around and file sharing. And then while that was happening, my manager at the time was able to get me a slot opening up for Linkin Park. And Linkin Park hadn't had the success of Linkin Park yet. Like, they were still a little band out of LA making noise.
Who's the lead singer that passed?
So Chester Bennington was a guy who's from Arizona.
I know he is, and I wanted to bring that up because my parents live in Gilbert.
Okay.
He's from Gilbert, Arizona, I discovered.
So the thing with Chester, it's really interesting because it kind of came full circle.
I was just going to say, it's full circle for sure.
So I go out on the road with them, and we're playing, you know, small venues, 1,000 people, 1,500 people. And, you know, they're killing it. I'm doing my thing. It's a good vibe. But, like, all of a sudden their record came out and blew up. And we went from playing, you know, smaller couple, you know, 1,000 people venues to stadiums. Like, immediately.
Yeah.
On that same tour. I was like, holy shit. Like, it took off. So that blew me away. It was amazing to be a part of that and be a part of that ride. And shout out to all the Linkin Park guys. Yeah. I love all those guys. But in the process of that happening, I got I signed a record deal, and they wanted my wanted an album, and I reached out to Chester, and I was like, look, dude, you're from Arizona, I'm from Arizona, and we kind of knew a lot of the same people, but we had never met until that tour. And I was like, do you want to be on the record? He's like, sure. So we sat down and started writing music for my record, and I was like, I want to do something that's like, you know, not something you've done yet with Linkin Park. Like, let's do something else. And I was like, what are you into? And he's like, we should do something dark and mysterious. And so we came up with this sort of like dark, moody track called Walking Dead, and it ended up being a huge song on my record. And
that's crazy, man.
Yeah. And so I got to know those guys really well. And so
just to add on to that, about
rest in peace Chester,
man.
I miss
Chester.
That dude.
My parents, my mom now lives in Gilbert. But if you go to any of the restaurants there, like, there's a place called Raising Cane's Chicken. They sell chicken, chicken strips. There's any place you go to it, they have a picture, like a whole shrine
of Chester.
Like,
yeah, of course,
like, he's like the hometown hero.
Yeah, man.
If you go to any of like the sandwich shops, he's everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's how I knew. I'm like, oh, that's a guy from Linkin Park.
And
it says Gilbert, Arizona. He's from Gilbert.
Yeah.
So shout out to Gilbert.
And he opened up a tattoo spot out there.
Yeah.
He was the homie. He was a good dude. Really, really good.
That's crazy. So Linkin Park kind of gave you that boost as well.
Well, it put me in a different world. I mean, that was sort of something like, you know, it exposed what I was doing to people who I don't think would have normally been exposed to what I was doing.
Yeah.
And it also helped shape me, because up until that point, the only thing I'd really done was hip-hop shows or b-boy events with the occasional, you know, whatever, wedding or whatever bullshit I had to do, top 40 club.
Yeah.
But I'd never been on that huge of a scale of a tour. I mean, those guys sold like whatever 13 million records at that time.
Yeah.
That year. They were like the biggest selling record.
The pay raise must have been substantial, right? For those gigs.
For them, yeah. I don't know about me. I was probably still making the same
numbers, but I'm sure you're happy.
But here's the thing is it you know, it taught me a lot of how to perform, even more so than what I'd already known. It took me sort of over the edge. But between Uneasy Listening, between the Shifting Gears album, which is my first album, mm-hmm. the Linkin Park tours, and then, you know, other things you know, that happened after that, it just the career started to go and go and go. And yeah.
Happened after Linkin Park?
I mean, then I started doing my own tours, started doing, you know, Coachella, started doing Bonnaroo, you know, all the festivals. I started sort of doing that stuff and doing remixes. I did some Motown remixes. I did remix to Nirvana track. You know, did that kind of stuff. Like all of a sudden the remix work started coming in, and I was just off and running, and it was pretty amazing. And I want to say 8 or 9 years ago, I linked up with LL Cool J, and he and I took a meeting to do a TV show that didn't end up happening. But
so we're talking networks.
Yeah.
Had a network.
I had a network meeting. Well, not with a network, with a producer who wanted to shop a thing to a network. Yeah. But they wanted me to be the DJ and LL to be the host of the show. And we ended up not coming together, but we took the meeting. And in that meeting, my manager was like, hey, you should open, or not open, sorry, you should be a guest spot for a spot that Z has for, he was headlining, you know, I was headlining South by Southwest. So she was like, hey, can you come and be a part of this, would you do it? And I was like, oh man, we just met this guy, like, oh, I hope, you know, because that's just sort of like, hey, nice to meet you, you want to do a guest spot? But eventually his team agreed to it, he agreed to it, and we went to go do the show. And
in Texas,
in Austin, for South by Southwest. And we did the show, and the chemistry that we had was so good, and it was very much like, it was just powerful. And we both walked off stage being like, wow, Art, this is incredible. And it was just him doing a guest spot on my thing. And we realized it had legs. It had the ability to grow. Yeah. So we did a couple more shows here and there. And then eventually it just became like, let's do more of this, you know? So
that's crazy.
So yeah, we've done Austin City Limits. We've done Lollapalooza. We've done a million. We've toured the world, you know, just he and I. And it's been great because it's like, you know, I never set out to have any of this happen. But the fact that I've just stayed true to what I do, and over the years,
it caught on.
You know, it's just the connections have naturally formed.
Already, so. I feel like we're just getting started.
We're out of time. It's good seeing you guys later.
Shout out to Gilbert Chandler in Mesa, Arizona. Yeah. Back to DJ Radar. This is just my own curiosity.
Sure.
Didn't Radar innovate some kind of pedal?
Well, he was doing like live looping, so he was doing some stuff that, you know, some people have made it, you know, very popular now. But from a DJ's perspective, there's only a few people who were ever really tinkering with pedals. But he just was very innovative in some of his techniques. Mm-hmm. And shout out to Radar, way ahead of the
Radar.
Curve.
Yeah. I invited him to my dorm room when I went to ASU and to smoke him out, but my joint was only this big, and I ended up just playing. I put a CD of he probably already had all of the Hi-Ro albums, but I put on 93 Till Infinity and just like stared at him.
He probably loved that.
Yeah. Let's talk about. Let's end it with the way DJs change because of technology.
By the way, I also have to shout out all your records in your fireplace. I don't know. Can you even pan to that? Let's just pan to that really quick, because that to me is fucking awesome. Like, there you go.
I don't have a lot.
No, but it's dope. Yeah, like that's you're like, yo, fireplace. That's where I'm gonna put all the records. It's dope.
Because now I'm sure it's changed. You're not lugging around records anymore. Well, you probably have it all on a stick, right?
No. I mean, we're still using vinyl as a means to manipulate.
Yeah.
And Serato was a program that came along that allowed us to do it digitally and not have to carry the records, but play off of your iTunes library. Mm-hmm. And then now there's a new technology called Phase, which is controllers that you put on top of the vinyl, and it allows you to still manipulate vinyl, but you don't have to do it with a needle. So it's reading movement. So basically, because that was always the issue is, you know, anytime we do shows, like, you know, there'll be shows that I do with LL where, you know, it's the stage is bouncy. And if, you know, sometimes we have B-boys out there and they're breaking or there's some sort of thing happening, or, he'll be just doing his thing and then, you know, it'll be a little bouncy. Mm-hmm. So the age old issue that any MC and, you know, DJ proper have had is that the needles got to keep the needles from skipping, right? Wind, sometimes sun, there's all these different things. So
or bumping it.
Well, there's a million different variables that would always make it harder to perform live in certain places. Now, with this thing, it eliminates that, and you can basically do all what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just doesn't even need to be on a vinyl record. It could be on a plexiglass record. It could be on a, you know,
like a dub plate.
Well, anything. Yeah. It could be you could go to Home Depot and cut out a circle that fits the same size of a 12 inch of whatever material you want, as long as it sits over the spindle and the thing sits on top of it. So if you're out in the you know, sun or whatever, it's like you can still manipulate whatever the record or whatever the thing is, the vehicle that won't warp, you know. So there's all these things, but the technology is called Phase. They're from France, and that's the bleeding edge technology.
That's
right now.
Crazy.
So that's what I'm using.
So we still have a few minutes, right? Now is the time where I felt like we didn't have enough. I felt like it just flew by because
you want to do two parts?
Yeah. You have to come back.
I'll go change real quick. We'll come back. Grow a beard out real quick.
I wanted to plug your social media as well as future show dates and like if you have a website and all that.
Sure,
good stuff.
Sure. Well, it's djztrip.com is my website. But it's really, you know, it's just sort of a hub for you know where to see other things. I post all my concert dates there.
Mm-hmm.
Z-Trip on Instagram, ZTRIP. Mm-hmm. And there's always something to plug. There's always some crazy show or always some weird thing that I've got my hand in.
Yeah.
Whether it's film, whether it's producing, whether it's remixing, whether it's live performance stuff, whether it's stuff with LL.
Uh-huh.
I just came from a meeting with Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo. He and I are going to potentially collaborate on something.
I remember them.
Yeah. So we just, literally came from there right here.
Dude.
And we had a great meeting, first meeting.
That's crazy.
So.
Devo. Next time we'll talk about
Devo. Yeah, we'll
I'm a fan of Devo.
Yeah. Same.
Dude, they were innovative, man.
So.
Wow. So that's crazy.
There's a lot of things. There's always some crazy.
What was their first album? Their Potatoes?
Well,
oh, no, it's Devo, right?
Yeah, but they had even stuff prior to that.
Okay.
But,
that's the album I have somewhere.
They had a few. But Mark has been, you know, he did Thor Ragnarok. He did, you know, Pee Wee's Playhouse and all that stuff.
A fan of both.
Rugrats. He did, like, all this different stuff. He did all the Wes Anderson, not all of them, but most of the Wes Anderson movies. Mm-hmm. But, like, he and I were sitting down and talking and collaborating on something, and it's like, it's just interesting how I've just, again, to anyone out there who is looking to do this as a career,
the one thing
I will say is just stay very true to yourself and your sound and find your audience and just lock in. Don't worry about, like, I always trip on these young DJs who come up to me like, how do I do it? It's like, man, just find your sound, lock in, and put in the work, and eventually things will come around.
And now it's easier, wouldn't you say,
platform,
social media.
It's easier to connect, but, like, you still got to put in the hours, like, you know, it was funny, you know, Mark, the thing that I loved about, you know, we had a great meeting, but one of the things he said that I was super flattered with, he's like, you know, I've seen a million DJs do different things and I'm not really into DJs. He's like, but when I saw you doing your thing, you're doing something different. You're utilizing it as an instrument. You're doing different things with it. I could tell it's not what I know. And I was like, the fact that he picked up on that was like, hey, man, you know, let's link was... It's flattering to me because, again, most of the time I'm just head down doing what I do, and the opportunities arise out of just putting the time in.
That's
kind of the war path. You just are going, and eventually you look back and go, oh, shit, like,
yeah, you did all
that
this
happened,
stuff.
You know?
Yeah.
I performed on the Grammys. I would have never thought I would have done that. You know what I mean?
There's, on the Grammys?
Dude, there's some, That's you know, crazy. I've opened for the Rolling Stones. There's these things that I
that's for part two, three.
You know what
four,
I mean? There's
yeah.
a lot of things that are just milestones that I forget because I'm on to the next thing. So whatever whatever's in front of me in the next 2 weeks, that's kind of where I'm at.
That's
you know
amazing,
what I mean?
Amazing.
Just going.
Yeah, dude, that was a pleasure. I mean, I feel like we didn't have enough time. We talked about Tempe a lot.
Yeah.
And we'll get off the Arizona next
time. No. Next time we'll come back.
As a fan, as a person who lived there at the time, like, you guys had a real big influence on, like,
I appreciate
this, yeah,
that.
I was just like, wow.
I really, there's no fucking time left, but I wanted to pick your brain. Like, how did all this come about? How'd you go from Tempe to this? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just an interesting.
Well, I kind of lucked out because my brother brought me to a podcast called DVD ASA, which at the time was David Cho, the artist, and Asakura, the porn star. And that way, through that, I met Money Mark from the Beastie Boys.
Well, yeah,
and
I love Money Mark.
We formed a band, Mong Chi, with Dave and Money Mark.
And we
recorded an album in Big Bear. And then there, that's how, I mean, because I gave up on rapping. Like, I was putting stuff out, like, just by myself, but I was like, I was working at Fat Sal's,
sure,
but then they're like, hey, do you want to come to Big Bear and record this album, or at least jam? But that ended up being, we recorded this album.
Okay.
And then next you know, we're doing like tour, like doing shows and
awesome
stuff like that.
Love it.
Yeah, so love that's it. How that I lucked out. I just showed up, and then
the next interview, I'm gonna sit over there and I'm gonna interview
that'd be
you
amazing. Yeah. That's never happened.
We'll do a
that'd
swap
be historic. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna wear glasses and fuzzy eyebrows.
Did you have fun? I mean, this was easy for you, right?
This is, dude, I felt like we were just getting started,
yeah,
to be honest.
I know, me too,
to
me
be honest.
Too part two. And I also, if you have any suggestions as far as other guests you would think would be a good fit as well, we'll talk to, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do.
A million people.
Yeah. All right. So with that being said, if you enjoyed it and you want to support the show still, we're still alive and
hold
well.
On a second. Is that Wicket?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you, Zach.
Sorry. He's a Wicket tattoo on his.
Patreon. We have a Patreon attached to the show. So go to patreon.com/Stevie Weeby. The new patrons, which are the older ones from last week, but I want to shout them out again. Pat Libby, Heath Pleasure, Yellow Swaggins. Shout out to Jaime Soares from going up from the $3 to $5 tier. Shout out again to Sang Hong, Joseph Ong. $500. He bought an album for $500. Escapable Aquariums. We love you, Sang Hong.
Somebody bought a $500
album.
Yeah,
off my Bandcamp.
What album?
It's an album called Escapable Aquariums. I did it on a 4-track.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's on Bandcamp.
I'm learning.
Yeah. And Sang Hong, that's your family.
That's awesome.
That's fam. There's a new website called StevieWeebyShow.com. There's merch on there if you want to buy a shirt. Instagram/QUANGOU. My music is at StevieWeebyBandcamp.com. Shout out to Necro Electric and Losco Project support and WFE support their podcasts. Buy my buddy's movie Hollows Grove. That's Craig Efros's movie. Hollows Grove. We have a new web series called Stevie on the Streety, and check that out on the YouTube channel. YouTube.com/Stevie Weeby. There's a new vlog series called Stevie's P.O. Box where I unbox packages. So send your packages to 1425 North Cherokee Avenue.
That could get ugly.
P.O. Box 1391, L.A., California 90093. And it has. But I love it.
Hey, man.
I love it.
Cool.
Dude, that was a pleasure, man.
Awesome,
I'm hyped.
Man.
Oh, now it's time for Little Ray's World.
Welcome to Lil Ray's World Show. All I gotta say is kids' minds must grow. I got abducted by some aliens and dropped in snow. Whoa. Stuck into a world that I do not know. So join me in adventures now. And I promise not to have a cow. My name is Little Ray. Hey, hey. My name is Little Ray. Hey, hey, hey. So welcome to my world. To all the boys and girls.
Welcome to Little Ray's World. Yeehaw! What the hell do we got here, B? Looks like a goddamn dove, man. Hey, Mr. Dove, what's going on, man?
Cuckoo, 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 cuckoo.
So what you're telling me is you used to be a drug addict named Hud, and now you're a dove. What the hell happened to you, man? And how'd you end up a god dang dove, man? Well, what you're telling me is you used to smoke joints dipped in PCP. I think you call them Sherm sticks, right? Beep, beep. Yeah, that's right, beep. And how the hell did you die there, Mr. Dove? Well, you decided one night to drink a fifth of vodka. You smoked some Sherm sticks and decided to run into traffic and got hit by a goddamn car and you died? Now you're a goddamn dove named Hood, and me and Beep wrote a song about you, son, and it goes like this, man. This one's about Hood the Dove, that poor old bird, man. Hud the Dove was not a thug, but he liked to smoke some drugs as he tugged on his clothes, puffing as he stared above. Where is love in his spliff, mixed with angel dust to give him a hug and it did lift. Warmed his hands just like a pit. Hud the Dove, he even chugged the vodka, man. He killed a fifth, he needed to put a plug in the jug that he shoved in his mouth. One day was out, wandering the streets to shout, high on PCP and leaping free like a skipper frog. Man, I missed the 25th of December, sipping. Join us in about 2 weeks for another episode of Little Ray's World, man. And make sure you go to www.stevieweebyshow.com and get some of that cool merch, man. Let's get her done.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.